This book began in 2014, in what now seems like almost another world, with a single question. How do you write the biography of someone who commits treason? The question is complicated because, as Paul Murray Kendall wrote in The Art of Biography, the usual task of the biographer is to perpetuate a man as he was in the days he lived, a spring task of bringing to life again, constantly threatened by unseasonable freezes. What my question suggests is that there may be some lives that we hesitate to perpetuate, and among the reasons for that hesitation must surely be treason. In the case of Robert Edward Lee, this turns out to be an even more serious hesitation. Being a Yankee from Yankee land, it has always seemed to me that the treason Lee committed was aggravated by the nature of the cause for which he committed it, the protection of legalized human slavery. And that rankles me to the sole of my abolitionist boots. I was literally catechized at my grandmother's knee in the righteousness of the Union War. She had caught the enthusiasm herself as a girl in Philadelphia's George Clymer School when white-haired veterans of the Union Army would make their annual Decoration Day visit to explain the real meaning of the war and excoriate the Confederate traitors. And it would take no great struggle for me to capture Lee in a squinting and cynical view. Yet no one who met Robert Edward Lee, no matter what the circumstances of the meeting, ever seemed to fail to be impressed by the man. His dignity, his manners, his composure, all seemed to create a peculiar sense of awe in the minds of observers. From his earliest days as a cadet at West Point, through 25 years as an officer in the U.S. Army's Corps of Engineers, and six more as a senior cavalry officer, and then as the supreme commander of the armies of the Confederacy, Lee was the model of gentility and propriety. John Brown Gordon, who served under Lee through the Civil War until the end at Appomattox, thought Lee was the pattern of modest demeanor and manly decorum. Abraham Lincoln remarked that a photograph of Lee showed that Lee's is a good face. It is the face of a noble, noble, brave man. Not even Ulysses Grant could escape the sense of being upstaged by Lee at Appomattox. He was a man of much dignity, with an impassible face, Grant wrote in his memoirs, dressed in a full uniform which was entirely new and wearing a sword of considerable value, while Grant was self-conscious of my rough traveling suit, the uniform of a private with the straps of a lieutenant general sewn on. I must have contrasted strangely, Grant admitted, with a man so handsomely dressed, 6 feet high, and of faultless form. These impressions appear so consistent, and over so many years, that it has been easy to conclude that dignity, manners, and composure simply were the man, that there was, as Douglas Southall Freeman insisted at the end of his four-volume biography of Lee, no mystery at all to Robert E. Lee. Or, as Burton Hendrick wrote in The Lees of Virginia, that Lee's character was ruled by a great simplicity, or that, in the words of an even more worshipful biographer, Clifford Dowdy, Lee could rest totally in very simple things. Even those close to Lee, like his staffer Armistead Lindsay Long, were convinced that his character was perfectly simple. There were in it no folds or sinuosities. However, this picture of straightforward, well-nigh angelic serenity sits uneasily beside moments when cracks and inconsistencies in that fabled serenity appeared. For instance, Lee worried constantly and insistently about money. Even though he had married into one of the most prominent families in the District of Columbia, that of George Washington Park Custis and his wife Mary Fitzhugh Custis, who owned the palatial estate they called Arlington, perched palatine-like on the Potomac Bluffs overlooking the capital city and staffed with a small army of slaves. In fact, according to the will he filed before going off to fight in the Mexican War, Lee had actually inherited a decent sum from his mother, Anne Carter Lee, and had invested it with enough success to have acquired a portfolio worth $38,750, almost $1.2 million in 2020. It made no difference. When he left for Texas in 1855 to become Lieutenant Colonel of the 2nd Cavalry, he still insisted on managing the family's money affairs, even though the rest of the family was living 1,600 miles away at Arlington.